This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
My name's Neil White. Hello and welcome to The Big Inside View, the slightly shorter and less glamorous sister show of The Big Interview with Graham Hunter. Graham is about to talk El Clasico. We're less than 48 hours away from Barca v Real Madrid at the Camp Nou, and he's just across town from that beautiful stadium. But first, you can get hours and hours of extra Big Interview content every month at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Sign up there for £2.99 per month and you get exclusive interviews and documentaries, competitions, Q&As, and you keep us on the road recording these shows. If you think the shows you get from us are worth £3 per month, please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter. You'll get the entire season's worth of Socio content straight away, and you can cancel at any time with one click if you don't think you're getting a good deal. Graham, we're going to focus entirely on Barcelona versus Real Madrid. Barcelona, already champions of Spain, won the Copa del Rey for the double and have their eyes on an unbeaten domestic season, which would be a first. Real Madrid have made it to the final of the Champions League. They're going to attempt to make it three in a row there, unprecedented in the Champions League era. And all of this against the political backdrop of division, intimidation, injustice and acrimony surrounding the question of the Catalan referendum for independence. Like it or not, these two teams are often avatars for either side of that issue. But let's start with a Spanish lesson. Paseo, what does it mean and why is it important?
Paseo, you pronounce it in English, guard of honour.
Yes, guard of honour sounds more like you would expect it to translate in Spain.
I guess a lot of the socios understand something about this, but for those who don't, a paseo is a guard of honour. And a pasillo is just like a little passageway, a little corridor. You know, I don't know why the term is less military, less formal in Spanish. A very, you know, empirical, militarized, formal society and language compared to guard of honor. I think it says something. It's more evocative. Spanish football certainly was a much more what was it? Not much more. Maybe Spanish football is only 20, 25 years out of date with Britain, in that where I think a sense of dignity and honour and doing the right thing was part of British football for quite a long time. And I can't remember specific guards of honour in British football, but I'm certain that there have been some. And in both your and my career, socios will be yelling at their iPods right now. But in Spanish football, in the past, for a trophy winner, it was pretty much de rigueur. And the last time that a Clásico was played, Neil, with one of the combatants already newly champions and the other side agreeing to say well done, was in... I find it remarkable that it's... The Clásico this weekend that we're previewing is going to be played on May 6th. The last time it happened was exactly 10 years ago, May 7th. In that season when Bernd Schuster won the title for Real Madrid in his debut season. This is Ernesto Valverde's debut season for Barcelona. Back then, I think Schuster's team had in the region of a 14-15 point lead by the time the Clásico came around on week 36, just as it is now. The gap on Atleti for Barca, Atleti are currently second, I think is 11. Madrid have a game in hand on Atleti, the gap is 15. The echoes are, I think, are pretty dramatic. Barca with third place then behind Villarreal 10 years ago. Madrid are third at the moment, as I said. And I don't know whether it was... I certainly don't ascribe gentlemanly values to Barcelona and not to Real Madrid at all. But back then, Barcelona acceded to the idea that because the title had already been won by Real Madrid, I think the previous game, that there should be a guard of honour. And I remember very well that at the Bernabeu, just under, I think there was some construction work, there was just under 80,000 people there, just under normal capacity now. And Xavi and Puyol, if people haven't been at the Bernabeu, it's got this, there's a metal mesh between the two sides of the tunnel as it divides. As you come down the dressing room, quite vertiginous stairs at the Bernabeu into a little, tiny little concrete stepping stone vestibule kind of thing, and then up a steep set of stairs onto the pitch. And they lined up downstairs out of view, and Barca came out first. Xavi and Puyol led the vanquished Barcelona out onto the pitch, jeered roundly, and that's what sport's all about as far as I'm concerned. If you get beaten by your rivals that you like to mock and you like to defeat yourself, and you come out and you get whistled and jeered, then you take your licks. So as Madrid then trot out 10 years ago, I really was struck by the fact that two ultra-competitive leaders, neither of them were very popular around the camp now, Raúl as captain and Sergio Ramos, already by 2008, a vice-captain, really it made a point of nipping across to both sides of the line and just a firm handshake in terms of, really, there was no way that there was gloating or salt in the wounds. It was a thank you. And Raúl is that kind of person. Ramos, I like hugely, but and he's not necessarily a taunter, but he is very belligerent, and he has what the Spanish like to call mala leche in him. I've often said that Piqué and Ramos are two sides of the same coin, and I like both of them very much individually and as competitors. But both of those guys handle the moment really, really well. There are a couple. Schneider, I think. The Dutch kind of either don't want to participate or kind of look a little bit haughty, and marched on the Gago, who I've never liked, Fernando Gago, the Argentinian, paper thin sort of flower in the wind midfielder, haughtily marches down the middle of it as if, yeah, this is to the manor born. If he'd done a regal sort of Queenie wave, then I wouldn't have been surprised. And the game's 4-1. Madrid utterly destroy a Barcelona who've lost their, there's no meat on their bones. Rijkaard has been lost in sporting and personal terms for months. It's now pretty famous. This was the turning point. Behind the scenes, the directors were disgusted. The appointment of Pep Guardiola was already very much assured. They'd gone through the PowerPoint meeting with Jose Mourinho. They'd considered Laudrup, they'd considered Valverde, they'd considered Laurent Blanc. And although far from announced, Pep Guardiola and Joan Laporta had pacted that he was taking over. Rijkaard knew he was leaving. As I say, his arrangements in his life were it was higgledy-piggledy. And subsequently, having spoken many times to Thierry Henry and Xavi and Puyol particularly, but Ida Gudjonsson too. About half that team I've spoken to about this night. And the ones that struck me particularly were Xavi saying that they could have lost by 7. Xavi being sent off, which, just to add to the mystery of the whole thing, he was sent off only for the second time there in the 90th minute, and just in pure frustration about having been... it was like that Wile E. Coyote or Tom and Jerry thing where, the villain gets run over by something and they're actually flat in the ground and all you can see is the one-dimensional body and face. That's what it looked like. And Xavi lost his temper, got sent off. He was sent off just the other week as if to prepare for this 10-year anniversary. He was sent off in Qatar for only the third time in his life and was very unhappy about it too. So, the spirits are moving, Neil. But that night catalysed something extraordinary. And given that you pointed out that Barcelona, 10 years later, have won 7 of that decade's league titles, you can see that while the thinking minds had begun to plot a different way from Rijkaard in the months leading up to that humiliation, that guard of honour is famous for a number of different reasons. It's something that Madridistas will obviously never forget. They enjoyed that night as much as they've enjoyed almost any Clásico for, I don't know, since the 5-0 when Michael Laudrup changed sides and played in the space of a year, exactly a year, in 2 5-0s, one for either side. So, subsequent to that, this is the first time that a Clásico has taken place with a recently crowned champion taking part. And Madrid have said for weeks now, we're not forming a guard of honour. And the reason is, it's whether it's they haven't got the honour or whether it's legitimate is up to you to decide, everybody to decide. But when Madrid won the World Club Championship and Barca played them, Barca didn't give them a guard of honour for that World Club. On the premise, which I think was wrong, we didn't compete in that tournament, therefore we don't line up to salute somebody who didn't vanquish us. Now, I think that's pretty wafer thin, personally. And what it's led to is a decision at Real Madrid, but led vociferously by Zidane, who said, we're not doing one, you know. I don't know what the French for bollocks to you is, but that's definitely been the sentiment. And I've enjoyed watching the debate with Ramos going, great title, you know, we salute them, well done, they're the legitimate winners, but we're not doing a pasillo. And I think that's enough if you say congratulations, well done, and not even through gritted teeth. To me, that's enough. But there are many people around Barcelona, apart from Andres Iniesta. The captain is interesting in that he doesn't often loudly take sides on anything. He'll talk about issues, but in this one he said, look, it's not relevant. It's far less important than people are making it out to be. Now, I'll give you any money that Gerard Piqué doesn't feel that way. Well, just for example, you know he's got a WhatsApp group called Enhorabuena, which is congratulations, which he shares with the Spain players at Real Madrid. And he's been very vocal in his Players' Tribune piece about last year they were all posing shirts off and muscles and we've won this and we've won that. He said, it's a lot quieter this year. And he admits that he uses this WhatsApp group to mercilessly taunt the Real Madrid players, notably, obviously, Sergio Ramos with, where are you this season? And there was one remark, I'm not sure it was Jerry's, but somebody said, on Barca's logic of not giving a guard of honour to a team who didn't compete in your competition, it's fair enough because Real Madrid never competed in this league, which is really brutal. But Gerard Piqué and Jordi Alba and Busquets, and I'm fairly sure Luis Suarez, would have given the option to say, yeah, guard of honour, you know, get on it. And if Xavi or Puyol were back there, because, you know, Xavi described it to me as the worst night of his entire career. So it probably should take place. There are reasons why it's not going to take place. As you can probably tell, I find the whole thing really amusing because neither of the clubs are mine. Neither of them own my heart or my devotion. So as an amused onlooker, I thought, and I'm glad you said you would raise this. I'm glad you did. It's a lovely sideshow, and maybe, you know, I think when you use the marketing phrase about sell the sizzle, not the sausage, I think that describes the Premier League in many instances. The Clásico's got the sizzle, and once you cut into that sausage and taste it, it's like Lawson's. Therefore, when I'm enjoying the sideshow of the Guard of Honour and the Pasillo and the arguments and the fact that even though Real Madrid have kind of made it pretty bloody clear they're not going to do it, there'll be some waiting until, you know, that sort of 3 minutes before kickoff when to see who comes out first, just to see if there's been a change of heart afterwards, irrespective of the result. Players will be asked about it again, whether it happens or it doesn't happen, they'll be asked about it. So I enjoy that little bit of sideshow, all the fun of the fair, the smell of sawdust and the cotton candy. But it's still the hot rides and the shooting at targets with guns and darts, the actual fun of the fair that, you know, I'm looking forward to most on Sunday night at 8:45 Spanish time at a full camp now.
To be honest, I think I'm with Andres Iniesta on this one. A lot of fuss about nothing, but at least it gave us a good excuse to do a history lesson on El Clásico. Listen, next up, I want to put you in Zidane's shoes for a second. Madrid, it seems to me, have a deeper squad than Barcelona and a deeper squad than Liverpool, who, of course, they meet in the final of the Champions League 3 weeks away. Is there any chance that the Madrid manager starts thinking about placing key players in cold storage for a Clásico?
Yeah, I think no, as you've posed it, and you've deliberately posed it so that there's a whole myriad of ways to answer it. So unfortunately, to preview a Sunday Clásico, we can't wait until the team news on Sunday morning. And therefore, I'm guessing, Neil, that Isco and Dani Carvajal possibly don't make it, which isn't a direct answer to your question. But if you're already without Carvajal, which I think they're likely to, I think they're sure to be without Carvajal, and Isco, although he trained ahead of the Bayern Munich second leg, the pain was such in his shoulder, he's got a damaged sort of shoulder neck injury. He might immediately fit into your category of maybe we better just, it was an emergency Clásico and the title was at stake and there was a point between them and four more matches left. I think they'd probably say, Isco, we're going to bandage you up. You're going to give us 60 minutes. I don't think that happens necessarily now. And then you've got different cases. Varane, you'll remember, in the middle of that fabulous match, I just thought it was, mistakes and all, when you water ski or ski at high speed, occasionally you fall off, but surf. It's damn exciting to watch in the meantime. So there were mistakes in that sort of high speed sort of white knuckle ride of 2-2 against Bayern, and about 15 minutes in, and for the next 6 or 7 minutes, Varane, looks as if he isn't going to make it, and I think he gritted his little French dont and said, "I'm not giving up," and therefore, while Varane might start, Varane's a doubt, and the midfield, are knackered. Modric ran himself to an absolute standstill. So I don't mean to dodge a straight answer to your question, but I think Zidane's dilemma is actually a bit more complex than the one you posed at me if I were the manager. And I think if everybody was largely fit, it's the end of the season, so there'll be niggles and tiredness and pain. But if everybody was largely fit, they'd go all out to win this Clásico because it's a wonderful way for them to try and overtake Atleti for second place. It's a wonderful way for them to repay Barca for winning 3-0 at the Bernabeu in December just before Christmas. It would be, I don't think Zidane necessarily thinks this way, but institutionally, club-wise, and certainly for players like Ronaldo and Ramos, who are ultra-competitive beasts, to take the shine off of Barca's double by winning this Clásico and then going to win in Kiev, although they want to win in Kiev for wholly different reasons. That will matter to every Madrid fan and every Madrid supporting journalist. But it would also matter to some of the players. So I think there is a dilemma. And I think what you've teased out is the fact that unless there are really, really clear signs of recuperation from certain players, there has to be a chance that Isco, Carvajal and two, maybe three more don't face Barcelona. We'll see. We'll see. There's a long time between Friday morning and naming a team on sometime late Sunday afternoon.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, you mentioned the chance for them to take the shine off of Barcelona's domestic achievement and the possibility of an unbeaten season. I'm beginning to get the impression when I speak to you about this that it maybe doesn't seem as big a deal in Spain as, for example, Arsenal's invincible season was in England or Celtic's last time out in Scotland was. Is that right? Is that the way things are?
Well, you know, I can't remember week by week when the Invincibles were playing. And I know that the media naturally built it up. But I do know from having talked to Arsenal players subsequently that they weren't obsessed by it. It wasn't... what they were obsessed by was winning the title. So I think there's a direct equivalent to Football Club Barcelona from that Wenger Arsenal Invincible side. I know, and not only have I spoken to several of the Arsenal players about that experience, I now regularly broadcast on La Liga TV with Lauren. And their mentality was, you know, the fewer goals we let in, the harder we work. The fact that we're not losing games means we're going to win the title sooner rather than later. And at that point, with the title wrapped up, there was kind of not a challenge from Wenger, but he said to the Arsenal players, okay, look, you know, it's going to be your call because you go out there and play. We won the title, but how about adding, you know, a layer of gloss on it? How about stinging everybody by going, yeah, yeah. Now, I think that's just about identical to what's happened here. You know, if you could give the Barcelona players to a man, having lost in Seville, having lost a couple of games retrospectively and gone through against Rome, every single hand would go in the air saying, we want a shot at the treble and, you know, bollocks to unbeaten for the season. Now that they're out and now that they have won this title and Iniesta has announced that he's leaving, the idea of giving him a little treble of his own, cup, league, and unbeaten for a season, which has never been done in the modern era, it's never been done in a 38-match league. I mean, the last time it was done, I think it was in the 20s. This would be of weight and of worth now, and therefore Barcelona's players will want to beat Madrid in the Clásico for its own reasons, simple as that. But in the remaining games, so long as they don't lose to Madrid on Sunday, which I have to say I don't think they will, I think it's now become retrospectively important to Barca's players as it did to Arsenal's players back in the Invincible season.
And I have a feeling that the achievement maybe becomes greater the further away you get from it,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I can understand that it's not something that is...
It's often true, isn't it? I think it's whether you feel that's to do with in the hurly-burly of a moment and this football culture of game by game and only think about and bam, focus, which is real, or whether it's to do with, you know, we venerate, don't we? Do you feel... I feel that not just nostalgia, but reminding people that, you know, football existed before it became so marketed, that helps retrospective awareness of achievements, don't you think?
I don't know. In case of the Invincible season, I think it's something that stands out because there's no real point of comparison. You know, it's a lifetime between the Invincibles, Wenger's Invincibles, and the the previous team that achieved it. It's interesting. I think it looks different the further away from it that you get. I just wondered if it was because it's something that Real Madrid don't have and it's something that Barcelona are seeking, maybe that would be an extra incentive for them to deny it to them.
It's become so. Now that they've won the title and the double and they can't win the Champions League, its importance has increased for sure.
If they manage to achieve unbeaten throughout the season, double, domestic double, you know, does that change the Ernesto Valverde story? I mean, so far he seems to have less authorship on these achievements than, for example, Guardiola did or Luis Enrique even.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. It, you know, the brand of football is less attractive than certainly the Guardiola era. That second half of that treble season under Luis Enrique was astounding. It was different. It wasn't, as to me, as beguiling as something that sucked me in, that made me want to understand it, that was magical, that genuinely felt Mozartian. That Luis Enrique second half of the treble was the Ramones, and it was rock and roll, 2 minute 20 second anthems. It was blitzkrieg. It was Johnny Didi, you know, Joey up front, just going mental with the enjoyment of leather jackets having guitars and an audience and fringes and dark glasses. That was Neymar, Messi and Suarez just sort of thinking life doesn't get sweeter than this, and we can not just beat anybody but rip anybody to shreds. So it was a second life for Xavi and so Luis Enrique, I don't think, was given anything like as much authorship as Pep was of his era. And I think that's right. Luis Enrique made good decisions. Things worked out. His personnel skills increased. And I think we're already tessellating into what Valverde did, in that he, as I said in the sort of assessment of the league, big inside view, to not only get respect from Messi, but to recruit him, to have him fully on side, not just in a man-to-man relationship or a managerial relationship, but how we're going to play and how best does it suit you? And this is what I want to do in midfield. Can you interact with that properly? I think people understand the types of debate that went on, and his trust in Vermaelen at the right time. His generally his very good use of timings of substitutions and which guy to choose. Substitutions is the one, you know, if we're talking about authorship, is the one sort of blank page he left in the book, whereby he didn't rotate well enough in order to win the Champions League. Risk and risk management and knowing when to spin the die. The Fergie element. Fergie always had that ability to risk, but he had it from an amalgamation of talent, experience, and a love of a gamble. Now, Valverde didn't have that, and at the point when the league was finished, in name but not arithmetic, he had the opportunity to rotate differently, take more risks, perhaps lose a game or two if it had to be that way, in order to be better prepared physically for the assault of Rome. So I think that, again, with your argument about retrospect, I think Valverde will emerge with different kudos from the squad management in terms of training level, attitude, relationship with key players like Busquets and Piqué and Messi, all of that, timing of in matches, reading a game and who to put on and why, again, tick. And he was remorselessly dedicated, as his players were. They were in tune about win the league, win the league, win the league. So a lot of authorship, but he needs to take a culpability and a learning lesson. It's very difficult to win the treble. And therefore, you're not hearing any castigation from me. But I think objectively, you can look back and say that he hasn't said, even told the truth about Rome, and saying that it wasn't because we were physically run down. Well, that's wrong. and their relationship with the Copa has become pyrrhic. It's cost too much to win it, albeit that 5-0 in Madrid on Iniesta's last appearance in the Copa del Rey actually didn't work out too badly.
Okay, look, a couple more questions, and they're both about, I guess, the wider lens on this fixture. First, tell us a bit about the backdrop to the political scene in Barcelona. You've lived there for many years now. Can you start by telling me how your hometown feels right now compared to, say, 5, 6, 7 years ago?
Yeah, there's been a wake-up call because, you know, when I arrived here in 2002, there were a lot of people who were naively asking for Catalan independence and independent sports teams. And they used to say to me, look, we've got an independent roller hockey team, therefore football must follow immediately. There'll be a Catalan team in the World Cup in football. Yeah, grow up. And then the way in which the young educated classes began to mobilise and hone their arguments and generate wider understanding of ills in central government. And then central government began to have revealed, as was true of Catalan politicians too, quite a degree of mismanagement and in some cases utter corruption. The momentum grew to this state we have now, where there were, you know, there was a sort of legal referendum, and then there was an illegal one. And from that day, on the first day of October last year, when the police waded into, in my view, completely innocent citizens, Catalan president in absentia is in limbo in Germany, a European-wide arrest warrant having been issued for him, but the Germans saying we actually, our legal system doesn't see the case to repatriate him. There, Pep Guardiola, for those who haven't followed the debate, wears that yellow ribbon because the yellow ribbon, yellow in general, has become a symbol for protest at the way in which three Geordies, three Catalan activists have been jailed, kind of in a preemptive way, rather than either having a court date set for any alleged demonstrable criminal activity. So when the cup final took place 2 weeks ago in Madrid, and many Catalans turned up to support Barcelona wearing yellow t-shirts, and they had those t-shirts taken off them by the police. So now wearing yellow is potentially a criminal offence. If I tell you that rather than describing the atmosphere, I think every person who's listening in a democratic society, whether that be in the UK, Ireland, or around the world, because we know we have societies around the world, I don't find that acceptable. I don't find that right. It's not the way I was brought up. That's not what we were taught in our country. To me, that's not democratic. It's not a vicious invasion of your human rights that you're not allowed to wear yellow, but it's the beginning. You know, if you're not allowed to wear yellow, then quite soon what are you not allowed to say?
You're not allowed to protest.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to protest.
They were stopped by cops who said take that off, and they took the garment away from them and stored them in a box.
Okay, so this game is on their home turf, but you've already seen protests in Barcelona met with brutal policing. So do you anticipate a freer expression of protest inside the stadium this time?
I don't know, but I'll tell you something, Neil. First of all, in central government, or in any pocket of Spain where they feel that the demand for Catalan independence is wrong and is against the constitution and therefore is criminal, they must be thanking for Roma. Because although the draw paired Roma with Liverpool, there was a point at which 4-1 up, Barcelona were going into a hat for the semi-finals, where there could have been three games out of four would have been clasicos, one of which would have been at the Bernabeu, two here. In terms of society, in terms of animosity, in terms of entrenched positions, in terms of poisonous words, in terms of the public safety dangers, I'm not sure that it possibly wasn't relatively fortunate that Spain hasn't had to deal with that, I think. So this game, the Mossos de Escuadra are different from the national police who were wielding batons on the 1st of October. The Mossos should be the ones in charge of this game unless the government imposes a different policing scheme, at which point I would worry. The local police are capable of handling the arrival. Not many Madrid fans travel through. I thoroughly hope that the Madrid team hotel and bus is not only well protected, but is treated with respect by people in this part of the world. You know, I'll be furiously angry if you know, decent sportsmen can't come and do their work safely and confidently. That will disgust me. And in the game, I think that, you know, in the 17th minute, they chant for Independencia. You've been there when they do that. There will be banners about liberty. There will be banners about this is not Spain, this is Catalonia. There will be yellow everywhere. It will be a frenzied atmosphere. The players will want nothing to do with that. Nothing. None of the players will invoke that to try and aid them win. And there is a chance that distracts Barcelona's players from the football and makes Madrid grit their teeth. And if Madrid do that, then, you know, I salute them. You use every stimulus you can find in competitive sport. You're right to mention it. It is a backdrop. But what I want is that this is a really valuable experience. Every time it happens, whether it be twice a year or six times a year, I find this enriching. You know, I thrill to it. It's a test for your vocabulary. It's a test for what you can see, what you can anticipate. I'm just intrigued by the fact that Barca have won three, Neil, three of their last 11 home clasicos in all competitions. You know, they were pumped here 3-1 in the Super Cup in that game where even when they equalised with a completely manufactured non-penalty, Madrid ripped away and scored two, one of which being that phenomenal Ronaldo goal where he stripped off his shirt, got a second booking, pushed a referee, you know, got sent off. And, you know, Madrid come having lost, you know, having only won two of their last 10 Clásicos at the Bernabeu. It's a remarkable sequence. The away team is usually a lot more confident in this match now. So when I say to you, I think that it could easily be an inspired Madrid, and maybe it starts draw, win Barcelona, or you know, lead Madrid and then draw, win Barcelona. I think Barcelona have the stronger squad, the stronger desire, the greater... I genuinely love the idea that the home side in the Clásico, which used to be not a banker win, but Madrid didn't win all that often at the Camp Nou, but for years Barcelona couldn't win by the Bernabeu and were intimidated by it. And that's completely the reverse. And the away team has to pack brown shorts in their luggage. I love it. But I think, for reasons that maybe we don't have time to go into now, but for a variety of reasons, I suspect that what we're going to see is a Barcelona side who have only lost one second half all season in the league, and that was to Las Palmas penalty. In every other second half of matches in La Liga, they've either drawn or won. That's what I think will separate the sides on Sunday night. And whether he's fit or not to start, this is Iniesta's last Clásico, and maybe that is a way to tie up. That offers Madrid a way out in that they could say, we're giving Andres Iniesta a card of honour. And bollocks to your league title, but Andres deserves something. And maybe that would satisfy all tastes, which is why it'll never happen in a Clásico.
That's it for another Big Inside View. We hope you enjoy El Clásico and keep listening for more big interviews with Graham Hunter coming very soon. We'll also have some big World Cup news to tell you about soon. And a reminder that for much more content like this, you can become a socio of The Big Interview at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. For £2.99 per month, you get more interviews, documentaries and Q&As with Graham. Sign up now and you get the whole season of extra content straight away. And if you don't think you're getting bang for your $3 a month, you can cancel at any time with a click. Our socios keep us on the road recording these interviews. Please think about becoming part of our club at patreon.com/Graham Hunter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.